Welcome to the Sorry I Offended You podcast. And today's episode, by the way, my name is Brandon, but today's episode is going to be about the annoyances of swindler coaches, but not only that, how anti-coaches are very annoying as well, and how I sit back as the observer and judge them all. So this is a coaching special for those who see what goes on in the coaching industry, but also helpful information for you when it comes to marketing your coaching business and things of that nature, and pitfalls that there might be. But first, I gotta say, I decided to change my tune, and I thought, like, if I can't beat them, why not join them? My goodness, it's windy out here. There's like twigs flying everywhere. Goodness, it's like a fucking hurricane. Anyway, so I decided to change my tune, and I thought, if you can't beat them, why not join them? You know, you either live a long, you either die a hero, or you live long enough to be the villain, and I have become the villain. So today I'm going to announce that we're going to be canceling people, and if you fall on this list, then you can see your way out. So for a cancellation, I'm going to go differently when it comes to canceling people. I'm going to cancel people over minor red flags instead of big scandals. I niched out and I focus on little red flags so we can nip this thing in the bud before this thing gets too out of control. So for one, if you like my post, instead of using a laugh or love react, I'll just ask your employer what they think about your passive aggressive behavior. If you misspell a word, let's see what your company thinks about you making them look like dumbasses. If you haven't engaged on my post in a few days, that's fine. It's not as bad as your business PayPal account getting frozen for terrorism, which I will notify PayPal for, because not giving me attention is technically emotional terrorism. Actually, I should say not technically, but literally emotional terrorism. Technically would act like I'm talking through a brain. Literally is me talking through my roller coaster of emotions. And I will also be canceling people who take up too much space in grocery aisles, people who drive Nissan, and people who do insane diets and eat fucking McDonald's of all things for a cheat meal. Like, imagine you eat for a week of like kale and vegan stuff and dry chicken breast, and then it's Friday and you're like, you know what? I deserve a cheat meal. And you go to McDonald's? Like, I just don't understand that mentality. You go to like some, I don't know, go to a nice restaurant or something. What is this? You want to play in the playpen too? You're canceled. So you want to talk to Ronald McDonald as well? You're canceled. You want to play with a Happy Meal? Canceled. Fucking doing, you're old enough to get gains and stuff and look out for your health, but then you run to McDonald's on your cheat day, canceled. I'm sorry. And I'm sorry for people who drive Nissan. I know it might seem unfair. But it is what it is. I had to pick a car. You know, I had to pick something, and Nissan was the first thing that came to mind. Just know it's not personal, but also you're canceled, and you're not allowed to live a normal life and post on the internet, and you're not allowed to get a job, and you're not allowed to get a mortgage for a house. It is what, you know, it's unfortunate, but you should have thought of that before buying a Nissan. So anyway, For real, if you want to fight cancel culture, if you want to stand up against cancel culture, or if it's impacting your business, because, and this is a sponsorship, quick sponsorship before we get into the topic here. But cancel culture is the shadow of your self-expression and visibility. So one aspect where I help my clients is addressing that shadow on an inner level and a practical level of how, you know, practical level of how to deal with it, what steps to take, things of that nature. And then on a deeper level of like, how do we clear that out of the body? How do we calm the nervous system when it comes to facing criticism and that fear? Because if we don't address that, your subconscious mind will protect you by keeping you small and invisible. Does that make sense? So it's like you might think you want a bigger audience, but your subconscious mind is saying, no, that's too risky, because then more people will see me, and if someone cancels me or if I say something wrong, then I'm fucked. So we address that in my program called Fuck Cancel Culture. It's a 10-day experience, 2 weeks to be exact, with, you know, the weekends off. And it's an amazing live experience with me. It's like a mini mastermind. It's cool stuff. It's a mini mastermind live course where you get all your needs, open Q&A, custom tailored support, and amazing content to help you stand strong when it comes to cancel culture and increase your capacity for visibility. So you can see that in the show notes, or you can find me on Instagram at Brandon Marshall Haven, or literally that's it. And you can find the link there. It'll be everywhere. You can find me. You know where to find me. Message me, all that stuff. Let's get into the show. First, I'm going to punch out and punch in to make sure that the mic didn't mess up like last time. All right, we're good to go. I didn't sound all muffly. That's a great thing to know. I don't understand. Why don't these mics have like magnets or something? You know? I don't. It's like I think last time what happened was I was trying to turn the mic to listen to videos, and that went wrong. And then it just changed to my computer mic. And I think it's just because the mic is so delicate and every little move will shift it into another setting. So that's unfortunate. Now I gotta act like it's a fucking time bomb or something. But anyway, on the topic of, you know, two episodes ago I talked about the Tinder swindler, and that brought up some stuff, and I've been wanting to record this episode about anti-coaches. So I really want to look at the entirety of the battles that go on in the online space. Sometimes ultimate boring battles to me. Like the other day I said, if you're going to make a passive-aggressive post about the coaching industry, go hard like Kanye West, or don't post at all because I'm fucking tired of it. And what I mean by this is, if you're doing some passive aggressive talk about the coaching industry and bad coaches, and people have to comment on your post where it's like, can you name names? I think I had the problem with the same person, blah, 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 blah. It's like, none of that. What I want to see in the future of this battle, if we're going to do it, I don't think it's a very productive business decision, but if you're going to do it anyway, what I'd like to see is that you tag the coach, like, you know, say something about their mom or some shit. Just, like, bring it back to middle school. And you tag them. And then battle it out in the comments. Like, just make a huge thread with 100 comments of you both going back and forth. Like, if you're going to entertain, if you're going to be a dumpster fire, go all in, you know? So, you've probably seen me joke about... We're going to go back into the coach scammers, because you probably see me joke about the Tinder swindler, and no spoilers here, but I'll give out Tinder swindler dog whistles to people who, you know, have seen it, right? They'll know what I'm talking about, but I'm not going to go into details. But one thing I will say, the whole thing could have been avoided if, you know, women didn't swipe right on men who wear sunglasses in their default photo. That's and look slightly goofy, you know, like that. That would have been a good way to avoid that tragedy. But on a real note, it was, despite all the jokes, despite my parody called the DoorDash Swindler that you can find on Instagram that I have fake conversations with, I had this this amazingly aligned conversation happen between me and a spammer that happened right when I was joking about it. So, and he role played the exact right way. He said that he was wanted to be a sugar mama because he was playing as a woman. But I was like, this is perfect for my DoorDash Swindler series. But anyway, so in all seriousness, if I could just step away from the joking for one moment, it was quite an emotional roller coaster of viewing that episode. Rebecca is more of an empath than me when it comes to viewing TV. Like, it seems like I can watch some stuff on TV and, you know, it might get my emotions a little bit, but it doesn't really, I don't really absorb it as much. So Rebecca really absorbed it, and it kind of like, you know, it was kind of like holy shit for her, you know, like, it was a very creepy feeling because it was a very creepy guy in that show or movie or documentary, whatever. And he did a lot of creepy things. Like when I first saw the trailer, you know, I didn't know the swindling was going that deep. I'll just say that. But I did notice it did bring back up some trauma for me in my journey. And I think, and I've seen that it brought up a lot of trauma for other people when it came to the coaching industry, because a lot of the ways that people market is often in a forceful way or a manipulative way, or, in this dire way. And I think it really comes from, like, I think some of the stuff that goes on in coaching was adopted from MLMs, because I heard about this in MLMs a lot. But it's like this concept of, if your client had cancer, would you let them say no? So it's just that crazy shit. And it's like, your client doesn't have cancer though, and you're not a doctor that treats cancer. So you're a coach. And while being a coach is a great thing, you don't need to be chasing around your clients like they have cancer. Like, I saw this one woman say that she had a conversation with a coach once and she didn't have the money, and the coach fucking told her to knock on her neighbor's door and ask them for their money. Like, what? Are you fucking kidding me? But I've heard that stuff before. Like, you know, I've heard that messaging before. Like, there's a way that you can find the money. You can get a loan from your parents and blah, blah, blah. And I'm not against lending. You know, I'm not against using leverage, right, to invest in yourself. I think that can be an awesome thing. And in ways I use leverage, and in some ways I regret it. In some ways I think I did some things right. But it's not the coach's space to tell you to mortgage out your house or borrow money or take money out of your fucking husband's bank account or wife's bank account, or to ask money from your neighbor or your aunt or aunt. You know, I grew up saying aunt, and then as a child, it confused me between, like, ants as in the insect and aunts as in, like, your aunt. And I don't know. I guess I oppose people who say aunt, but also they're probably fucking right. I don't know why people say aunt, including myself. Probably the people that say aunt instead are probably the right ones, because it's spelled A-U-N-T and it leaves less confusion between a loved one and an insect that crawls in your home and you have to lay down sticky traps for because they're eating all the crumbs that you left in your sink. But anyway, whatever, you know, say what you want to say. You're not going to change your behavior now. If you say aunt, you're probably just like me, and you're going to say it for the rest of your life. And then you're going to teach your kids the same shit. So, you know, what can you do? But anyway, I feel like my mind goes like that, where it's like, I'm always like, well, but anyway, let's go back on this topic. With my experience, I've definitely experienced being the client behind manipulative behavior and being the coach being taught that behavior, thinking that's the way that I had to run my business. And it fucked me up on both angles, right? And the thing is, it's like, when you see these anti-coach campaigns, it's kind of like you're aiming for one or a few people, when the issue is that's how a lot of people learn to market. So you have a lot of people that feel like they're doing the best they can for their business and the best that they can for their clients, not realizing that it's fucked up and inauthentic and they're going against their own alignment. So that's something, you know, would it be a better message if we help people get back into alignment rather than feeling like we need to take down all the coaching swindlers or something like that? But anyway, I'm not going to go too far into that yet. My experience through coaching, the thing that it brought up for me in the Tinder swindler is just that feeling. And again, without going into too much details, but the feeling when you feel like you're drowning in debt and you've abandoned your financial boundaries. The person that I was, that I always have been in my life for the most part, has always been a person who knew how to save money well, knew how to invest money well, very responsible, maybe saved more than I needed to, because that's what I was taught as a kid, and always paid bills on time, having excellent credit, things of that nature. But then when I got into coaching and I started investing in myself deeper, I abandoned those financial boundaries. And sometimes looking at it, is there things that I can point the finger at previous coaches? For sure. But also, I was in a cycle and a belief system that is bigger than just a single coach. And it's also something else to look at is what were the coaches I worked with taught where they felt that it was right. You know what I mean? So is it really productive to say that it falls on them, or, you know, to give away that responsibility towards them? When I quit my job in 2015, I went all in and I put everything. I took on more retreats than I needed to. Like I signed up for like two different high ticket retreats, $7,000 each. Around 7,000, I joined a mastermind that was at first like something that was affordable at the time, which was $2,500 down, $500 a month. And that was cool. But then my ego got in the way and I gave in to being upselled. So shortly after that, went from joining a more of a top tier mastermind with people earning more, thinking that would speed up my process faster, and putting, I think it was like $5,000 down and $1,000 a month instead of $500 a month. And then I was just investing in myself like crazy. And the root cause of this issue was I abandoned my boundaries. You know, there's somewhere in the middle where I could have invested to a certain edge, because I invested way past my comfort zone at that point. I could have invested to the edge with still honoring my boundaries and keeping things in order. But I got caught up in the hype. And some of that may have been through that particular coaching container. And other of it could just have been the talk that went around the industry, right? It could have just been the talk of like, you know, if you really care, you'd invest in yourself. You always need a coach. You will up level if you're in their energy. You'll collapse a massive amount of time. And while coaching is so impactful, and I wouldn't be the man that I am today if I didn't, I remember that first retreat and I fucking changed. You know, I evolved so much just from that one retreat. And then going in that mastermind, like, my whole brand changed from that. And I dropped more into my heart. And, you know, I realized the deeper purpose I had. And I healed trauma that I had with family and resentment that I had and things of that nature. And I, healed that. I healed some deep childhood wounds. But the thing is once I abandoned my financial boundaries, I let it go completely. And instead of grounding myself and being and having a level of practicality, I allowed the illusion or what could be possible take over. But instead of you know, the issue is with the law of attraction or manifestation is that you don't have to play chicken with the universe. You don't have to do all this stuff to prove that you believe. You don't have to put yourself in dire situations in order to manifest. And somewhere I was given that message. And I don't know particularly where, you know, is just the environment that I was in, that I was receiving the message or receiving the idea that it would be a good idea at that time to abandon my financial boundaries, go all in, and things would work out, which they did. You know, it worked out to this day, but it probably put me through a lot of unnecessary pain, stress, and trauma that I didn't need to go through. And I also learned from that experience. So I think there's like two things there where it's like you get to know what to avoid and you get to know how to invest wisely. But you also get to forgive yourself if you make mistakes. And you also get to let go of the grudges that you have toward whatever pushed you into making those mistakes. Because if you hold on to the grudges, then you can never grow past that. And you project onto future coaches or, you know, project onto your own self. And you don't find the values and gifts in that. And if you're hard on yourself for making those mistakes and you live in that regret, that will eat you alive. And for a lot of people, I think that sometimes holding onto that pain and that regret and that resentment, it hurts them even more than the first action that happened. Because they're holding on to it for longer and longer, and then they hold on to it, and years go by, and then all of a sudden a decade went by, and you're holding on to that pain and resentment and feeling bad about yourself and all of that stuff. But I was in that mode, and not only with one coach. You know, I was in that mentality of like, I thought the answer was to throw money at my business to make it work, right? And I remember investing another $2,500 in another course and when I was underwater already. And I remember investing $5,000 into a website when I didn't need to. But then it's like, just like coaching, the marketing around people who want to build websites, it's the same thing. It's like, well, if you don't have a website, how do people take you seriously? And then after that, I didn't even use that website that much. And then after that, I was just like selling directly through social media, right? I realized like, oh wait, I didn't really need a website. I can just make money off of straight off social media and straight off like landing pages and things of that nature. And I think some people don't quite understand that sometimes. Some people don't realize how the internet has evolved. And I think a lot of people pull you into what the internet was maybe back in 2007, where a website was a bit more crucial. But the truth is like, what you really need to show up is the value that you have in a message and just be good at your messaging and have the boldness to sell your programs. Because your ideal clients, they're not going to look at it and be like, oh, well, I didn't get to go through a particular website, so I don't like this, right? I have a website now, BrandonMarshallHavener.com. Rebecca is still working on a new website, but like Rebecca, for ever since we've been dating, really, has been selling in various of different ways and have been having great success with their programs, right? So it's like either selling through a PDF or even a Canva carousel or having people DM her or maybe a lead page sometime. So it's like there's various ways you can do it. But I digress. My point is a lot of times going into business, you're going to be sold things and you're going to be told that you're going to be told things where you're not adequate without that coach or you're not adequate without that website and you need to do this to prove yourself. And then it becomes a big proving game. One of the biggest things that pissed me off in my journey was I was at this event. And at the time, I already invested like everything I had plus everything I didn't have into coaching and spent nearly 2 years of investing high in coaching to the point where, you know, I was creating a situation where I was drowning. And I remember in particular that I was still, you know, I was still committed to investing myself, but I had to invest by my means. And I went to this event where I think it was $500. I think I might have gotten an early bird discount or something like that. It was a local event. And I was just there for the event. I knew I was just there for the event. But you know, with events, they always upsell, or often they upsell. And the way they upsell was through segregation. And what they did was they got everybody who, I guess, put a deposit down on the mastermind they were upselling and gave them a VIP dinner while they sent the rest of us into the room that we usually eat dinner in. And I guess they were both nice rooms. I guess the VIP dinner was smaller and nicer, but it was like, it was kind of like identifying the people who didn't, who dared not to pay thousands of dollars for the upsell. And when I mean thousands of dollars, I mean like probably like a 30K program or, you know, maybe a smaller K program, maybe like 15K or something. I don't know. You know the deal. But so they separate us. And I remember like kind of the pressure was so high and just like, you know, they get your emotions and stuff. And the pressure was so high. Like I know someone who was trying to dip into either their retirement account or whatever to pay for it. And whatever, sometimes it may be a good idea, but you don't want to be in that high-pressured situation. You don't want to be in that pressure cooker where, you know, where most selling happens. And maybe I can go more into detail about that as well, but I want to get down to the story. So I was in the room of the non-buyers, the unvaccinated non-buyers. And this guy that was speaking at the event, he asked our tables, like, do you have coaches? And I think most of us said no. And he's trying to give us a lecture saying, well, how can you coach other people if you don't have a coach? And in hindsight, I wanted to punch him in the face. But that probably wouldn't, you know, actually, that's probably not good hindsight because it would give me assault charges over something stupid. So I guess it's good that I didn't say anything. But also I was feeling insecure about it. I actually felt shame that I didn't have a coach at that time, even after 2 years of just financially investing to the edge for coaching, right? My life was in financial ruin at the time. And I just thought to myself, like, motherfucker, I just got out of a long-term coaching relationship and you're going to fucking shame me for not having a coach? Like, I felt pissed off about it. But I also felt ashamed of myself, and it was just a horrible feeling. And that's the stuff that does go on in the coaching industry, right? And it doesn't need to be like that. Like, for one thing, it didn't need to be in that environment where people were pressured or felt shame for not buying an upsell. Buying an upsell is something that is a decision that you make. And it gets to be an empowered decision rather than an egoic decision to prove to other people. Like, maybe the upsell, even if I had a milli in the bank, if I had $1 million in the bank at that time, we're getting close. Hi, Rebecca. Yeah, we're gonna I think that's the goal for this year, if I'm correct. I think the goal we set for us was $1 million, so that'll be fun. But even if I had a milli in the bank, that offer could have been out of alignment for me, right? Maybe I liked the event, but, you know, I wasn't, you know, I knew that going in that mastermind wouldn't be for me. So, you know, I think that emotional spin cycle that people are told to do through selling is not only manipulative, but it hurts the coach and the client. And something personally, I just want to say that, you know, I felt that pain was so familiar to me in that Tinder Swindler documentary. And, you know, I wasn't promised a man to love, but I was promised a dream. And I think sometimes that coaching can be so focused on the dream and what can happen when avoiding the practicality of embracing mastery. And embracing that, like, through this coaching, I'm learning something. And through this coaching that I'm mastering my craft and I'm becoming a better person and upgrading and things of that nature. But the thing is when you charge people, if you charge people over their, if coaching starts making your losses bigger than your profits, then the justification for staying in there is you're investing as a person that you're becoming. But the thing is you're human. And while quantum leaps are possible and things of that nature, you don't know when your time is coming, right? It's a very stressful thing to put that time crunch on your manifestations and being hard on yourself and saying it must happen now. And what I relate to is, I don't want to get so dramatic, but did the thought of suicide come up in my head during those times? Absolutely, because I felt like I was in a dark hole. I never was at the point of like actually considering doing it, but it's like one of those fleeting thoughts like, but if I did, it would make life easier right now because life is super fucking hard being in this financial ruin. You know, like I remember dreading seeing the mailman come. Like that's how much fear I was. And some of that fear had to be alchemized because I was raised into thinking that I'd be doomed if even I was one day late on a bill, right? Like I was never one day late on a bill. And now I was in a position where I was running on fumes with credit cards and, you know, like I was in survival. And that's another thing about that coaching promise is that it's not always the best to invest your edge because, or, you know, like, yes, you want to challenge your comfort zone, but if you're investing too far in your edge where it's putting you in a hole, then it's going to put you in survival mode. And how can you think about manifesting this dream life if you're so, if your survival mode is triggered and you're worried about getting the lights on and, or if you're going to have electricity the next month, or you're worried about making that mortgage or rent payment, you know, things of that nature. Now, for some people, maybe I've seen it work where people's back against a wall help them push forward. But if you're always putting your back against the wall, that's a stressful experience as well. So anyway, I knew the feeling. It was stressful even seeing the mailman. Like, I just, like, I almost wanted to hide from the mail that was coming in because I knew it meant more late payments and credit card debt. And, you know, I just felt like everything was falling apart and it was a dark place to be in. And I didn't have to put myself in that dark place. You know, I could have been more gentle with myself and my growth and my expansion. And some of the things when it comes to coaching that I see that puts people in this place is the aspect of thinking they need a coach, the aspect of thinking they need to say yes on a high-pressured sales call to prove that they are, you know, they want to be successful, things of that nature. Like, I think a lot of people, including myself, maybe from a man's perspective, there was always this prove-it energy of, like, I want to prove them out that I'm the real deal and I want to make this payment, right? You know, I want to show them that I'm the real deal and I'm not some just a freebie seeker or something like that. Which is also against how I'm designed and how many people probably should make decisions. Like, you shouldn't feel like you have to make a decision right there on the phone call. You should allow yourself to have like a few days to meditate on it and see and make a logical decision rather than an emotional decision when they stirred up your emotions, when they stirred up your pain, when they stirred up what you want in life and things of that nature. Another problem I see with coaching is not necessarily saying to be in their energy, because I've seen that complaint, but the codependency of being in somebody's energy. So what I mean is like, if you're going around thinking that you can't be successful unless you have a coach, then that creates an environment of codependency. Like, on some level, I agree that it's easier to sell if you've been coached yourself. But if you think that you have to always be paying like over 50% of your income and sometimes over 100%, then that's a recipe for disaster. And how the fuck can you build wealth doing that? Like, there's seasons of not having a coach. There's seasons of, you know, it's just like you get to have those boundaries. You get to be practical and logical. I think a lot of times people get caught up in the mystification, but you get to be logical in your investments and say, you know what? It makes sense for me to invest 20% of my income into myself. Maybe that's through coaching. Maybe that's through courses. Maybe it's not investing in yourself anymore. And you're in a season where it's like, I want to invest in stock and crypto, something like that. That gives you a level of sovereignty where you don't feel like you're stranglehold, like you're not, you don't feel like you're in a stranglehold by the coaching industry, or you're caught in this rinsing cycle of the washing machine of the coaching industry. And then something else, or some other things I hear said, invest all in and be all in for long term. That's not necessarily true. Like, yeah, I'm cool. Like, obviously you want to be a woman or man or somebody in their integrity when it comes to investing in yourself. You want to fulfill the amount of time that you signed up with, but that doesn't mean you get to fall for the messaging that you always have to invest all in and be all in for long term. A lot of times coaches use that as a way of guilting people into upsells or like for continue or retention in their coaching containers. And it's like, no, retention gets to become natural. Like, it gets to be natural. Like, if you're investing all in and staying all in for long periods of time, most likely you could be making a lot of money, but you're making your coach rich while you're scrambling around trying to figure out how to pay your coach who costs, you know, triple the amount of your mortgage. You know what I mean? Not saying that that's bad all the time, but when you are disconnected from having a time frame, that can lead to disaster. Because what I see is where people suffer is they're disconnected from a time frame, even if they're signed up to like a 3-month course, but then they're fed the message that, you know, they're doing something wrong if they don't re-up with that coach. That's a disaster waiting to happen. And then the disaster for me was joining an Evergreen course or coaching mastermind. And then when anyone left, there was kind of like this shame there, you know, there was this shame that they left and they gave up on themselves. And that shame kept me into continuously investing out of my means to prove something and to show that I wasn't giving up on myself without realizing that comes from me. That doesn't come from external sources. So I want to address all the swindling thing. And I want you to know that I do, more times than not, I do make fun of the anti-coaching complaining online a lot. And I do that for a reason as well. And I think a lot of times people don't quite understand the pain that I've been through and the things that I see and the things that I recommend avoiding. You know, I know this one person, without any confidentiality breaches or nothing like that, I know this one person who was making more than 100K a year. So, you know, a decent mid six figures, I guess you would call it. Mid six figures a year, but never having money and always being in survival mode. Like earning that type of money, but then giving that all away to multiple coaches. And that doesn't only fall on the coaches and their messaging. That falls on you and the, you know, learning to have that those financial boundaries, you know. And a lot of times you can get caught up in a situation where coaching becomes a bit parasitic. You could be making a lovely amount of money, like the amount of money you dreamed of, and then look in your bank account and be like, but why am I still poor? You know, so in that situation, you know, I think in that situation, that person has gone on a path of honoring themselves. And that was something that I needed to do. That was something Rebecca has been through, situations like that as well, where leaving a container was liberating. And leaving was like, you know what? I'm finally doing this for myself. And I finally feel free. When I first dated Rebecca, she left a certain mastermind. She was selling her own mastermind and had the best launch that she had back then. Like, she was having an amazing launch because she untangled herself from something that was taking her energy and her capacity. So, okay. Sorry, I had to punch in for a minute. So going into the anti-coaching rhetoric, some things I want to say about that is, like, come on. If you saw your doctor always talking shit about the medical industry and saying all doctors, all these other doctors sucked, you know, you wouldn't want to be you wouldn't want to be seeing that doctor. Maybe you'd be turned off about the entire medical field. But here's the thing. Here's what happens when you get caught up in the anti-coaching culture. And I speak by this by experience. This was part of my journey. Because after being through that experience and after having some bad experiences with coaching, I decided to be like, I'm the anti-coach and I'm not like those other coaches, and fuck the coaching industry and fuck the industry norms, bro, and all that stuff. And it created a bad situation for myself as well. And here's what I want to say is, like, if you're saying fuck the coaching industry, then you're blocking yourself from the value that you see in your own coaching, because now your focus is just on the worst parts of what you see within coaching. You're focused on the worst parts, and you're not focused on the beauty that your gifts and your coaching can bring to somebody's life. So that put me in a position where I lost that pride in coaching, or lost being connected to the gifts that people have. My focus was more on how do I not hurt people than how do I serve people. Like, obviously you don't want to hurt people, but I was so focused on the bad rather than the good that my coaching and my lessons could bring. So my marketing changed. I changed, you know, I was one of those people that always had something to say about the coaching industry. I felt like it was righteous to expose those who've done something wrong. And I spent a lot of energy on that. I spent a lot of energy on destruction. And I felt like it was righteous at the time, and I thought it was a good use of my energy at the time. But the truth is, I was exhausted. And the truth is that I was slowing down my growth in that process as well. So I joke about that a lot. I joke about how it's a boring conversation at this point. And I guess I can, you know, I can relate to where people are coming from, but it just cheapens the actions and the innovation of what having a mentor can bring into your life. And it's focused on the wrong thing. And it's focused on something that is destructive. Not only is it, you know, this is not something to say like the coaches that have messed up, you know, actually, coaches are humans, and the world isn't black and white, and it's not good versus evil. And even the coaches where I've had not the best experiences with, they're humans as well. And a lot of times we want to compartmentalize people into being evil or good. You know, either they're blood-sucking narcissists or they're angels. But what I have found is that we're all humans and we all make mistakes. And what I found was, through all my experiences and all I've seen behind the scenes with coaching relationships and things of that nature, is that if you look for problems, you'll find them. And you'll live in this world that feels hopeless. It's kind of like the same thing I said about, you know, a few episodes ago, I talked about the Joe Rogan incidents. And then one episode ago, I talked about like people who judged hip hop culture from the Super Bowl and things of that nature. And something that I said is, without knowing the whole story, you're put in this hopeless place. Well, one factor of that is when you throw the baby out with the bathwater and you view things in a binary way, where either somebody is evil, this evil scammer, which there are people who are straight up scammers, don't get me wrong, or they're good. But just like I said in the beginning of this podcast, I said that Batman quote, you know, you either die a hero or live long enough to be the villain. And I think it's the same way where people perceive coaches. Either they remain a hero and they die. That's a little dark. But like, they remain a hero, or they live long enough, or you're in the coaching container long enough to where they become a villain. It's also, I think I use this example, I think I talked about it too on a previous podcast, is I remember doing this, I was at this yoga recovery class years ago, and this woman said that, but you know, love comes with betrayal. And if you love someone deep enough and you're close enough to somebody, then there's going to be times where you feel betrayed. And I think a lot of times people don't have that emotional maturity to communicate, or maybe they're just simply triggered, right? You know, they hit a deep wound and that communication wasn't there. Maybe the mentor failed to communicate. And maybe they're both good humans, but they rubbed up against each other's pain. And then you feel that deep betrayal from that deep love that you once had. But what if in some ways that's normal? not to normalize swindling, but to realize that when you have deep relationships, there's going to be bumps in there. And sometimes you outgrow coaches. Sometimes you outgrow people. Sometimes, you know, sometimes we take for granted the things that we learn from those experiences and not realize how much it helped us because we're so focused on the thing that we've outgrown. So with my personal experience is I saw a similarity between being the rescuer as an anti-coach and being the rescuer as pro-woke. Being, you know, being in cancel, like they both kind of related to each other. And you would notice that people who talk shit about the coaching industry or spirituality had found a new religion in wokeness. And a lot of people, including myself in the past, stepped into that hero on the drama triangle. Now, something I say about the drama triangle is that the hero, it's a hero, the villain, and the victim. And if you want to learn more about drama triangle and things of that nature, I'm happy to talk more about that inside my courses, including if you have custom tailored questions that you have in Fuck Cancel Culture, because I do believe that the drama triangle plays a big role in cancel culture as well. So if you want more details on that, join Fuck Cancel Culture. But the drama triangle, the hero seems like the most noble position to play in. But when you're the hero, you're telling other people they're incapable. And you're not allowing other people be grown-ass adults. And actually, you're damaging them in a passive way, even if they look to you as a hero at some point. And that could lead to resentment down the road. But if you're playing the hero that you have to protect the internet from scammers, and that you're not teaching the people around you to be capable, like it's one thing to say, hey, I went through that, so maybe you don't have to go through that. It's another thing where you are hyper-vigilant and you're canceling people and telling people that not to trust other people. And like I've seen some crazy shit on the internet where people who deem themselves a hero and then they make blanket statements like, don't trust people who listen to Jordan Peterson because they're evil, or don't trust people who do this, or, you know, I'm the only coach you can trust. Like sometimes I parody that myself, but there's people who actually kind of create this environment, and it's almost like, I don't want to label it as, you know, pure narcissistic personality disorder, because that's thrown around a lot, but there is a hint of narcissism when you are telling people who they're allowed to hang out with or who they're not allowed to hang out with, right? Or, you know, just like cancel culture, when you're saying like, this person is canceled and you shouldn't be hanging out with them, and if you give them a platform, then you're against me and all this other stuff. So see, there's a parallel between wokeness and coaching, or anti-coaching for that matter. But what I've experienced is when I put the blend of wokeness and coaching, you have to walk a fine line of being perfect. Not only being perfect, but just obeying an ideology. So even if you are like, on good, you're being good, but you don't, you have a disagreement with the ideology that you opted into, it can land you into a lot of trouble. And in my journey, when I was super into being an anti-coach and trying to be the hero and putting myself on a pedestal in a way, having my own head stuck up my ass, it led to an eventual destruction of, you know, let's say a lot of clients that joined one of my programs at around the same time where I was on my virtue signaling high horse. And when I spoke out against the coaching industry and being woke and all that stuff. And the reason I say this is that you might get a lot of traction because people like to complain and people love a dumpster fire, but who you're attracting is people who haven't healed their wounds and they're looking out for blood. And it's only a matter of time that you become the villain in their story so they can step away, so they can project the pain that they have onto you. So it's always a disaster if you're positioning yourself as this rescuer, as the perfect one with no flaws, and always pointing out how you're the one to trust and other people are not to trust. So by doing that, you surround yourself by a lot of fickle people. And if you ever make a public mistake or something that they disagree with, you will soon see an exodus of people that don't fuck with you anymore. And it could, you know, if you're a heart-centered person and you have a connection with your clients, it could be a bit devastating. But it puts you in that situation where people aren't willing to communicate with you. People aren't willing to honor that relationship or honor you or look past the reputation smearing, because you attracted them through reputation smearing and that behavior. So what you'll notice is people who are committed to misunderstanding you, committed to cutting you off, and the moment that, you know, you step on an eggshell, and it creates a very fickle environment. So my thing is, it's like you cannot build, just like you can't build a healthy romantic relationship on the drama triangle, you can't build a thriving business relationship on the drama triangle. Eventually, if you position yourself as the hero or the rescuer, and automatically by doing that, you have positioned your audience as victims. And at a certain time, they will find that comforting. They will find it to be maybe even some sort of breath of fresh air that you're speaking out to the pain that they felt, and you are emboldening their victim story and making them feel more justified and entitled, for their victim story. But it's only a matter of time when you're on the drama triangle that drama triangle plays musical chairs. And eventually, you may find yourself a victim to them, and them being the resentful villains. Or maybe they view you, they used to view you as a rescuer, and now that pendulum has swung and they automatically see you as the worst evil villains they've ever come across. Even if you never meant to hurt them, even if you always wanted the best for them, but you did something to walk on that wrong eggshell to be that villain. Your belief system and whatever they expected you to be, they found a crack. And with that binary thinking, they didn't treat you like a human being. They treated it binary, where you were once perfect and flawless, and now there was a crack. There was a flaw, so that must mean you're evil and you're the devil. And that's where binary thinking gets us. That's where marketing from the drama triangle gets us. That's what marketing from anti-coaching is, or from that place of wokeness. When you're the woke person that is always concerned about problematic behavior, you're playing a hero on the drama triangle. When you're the anti-coach, and you are up on your own high horse thinking that you've learned everything and that people need to follow you, and you're speaking to that powerless victim in others, then it's only a matter of time that the people that you've, in a way, victimized to your hero become resentful of your enabling behavior. Because it sends this indirect message that they are not capable without you being their hero. And when you send that message, they might not feel that message at first. But eventually, they start to feel it, and then that resentment comes up. And maybe that's what happens a lot of times when we have issues with coaching. It all started like what I talked about, that the swindling coaching ways or, you know, the unaligned marketing tactics all start at that point where you say, well, if you thought you could cure cancer, wouldn't you do everything to sell them into your program? And that right there is operating from the hero position. So perhaps we fall in the situation where one person thinks they're the hero to coach others, and then the people coached by that person ends up being the victim, and then they want that victim justified. Then they look for a new hero, and maybe that new hero is that anti-coach. Or maybe they become the hero. They think they've become the hero of being the anti-coach. But then they repeat the cycle that they were traumatized with from the beginning. And it's that same behavior, the same enabling that says, well, I'm going to do everything I can to sell this person because I think I can solve their cancer. Or I believe that I am the one for them and they need me. And the ironic thing is, you know, so many people like to throw out the terms trauma-informed and shit like that. But there's a lot of people who've been traumatized by coaching, and then they're spewing their trauma with blanket terms, and they're spewing their traumas on other people, and they're reenacting the ways that they've been traumatized in a more noble skin of paint, when in actuality it's the same exact thing. So how about them apples? So it's like, you know, we got to step away from our egos, right? And we got to recommit to being into ease and flow. And my intention here, at least, is to be more of a watcher and an observer, and to notice the different phases I've been through, and not to take myself too seriously, and be the best person that I can, but know there's always room for improvement and more alignment and things of that nature, and knowing that I'm not perfect, and knowing that other people that coach me in the future are not perfect, and that maybe it feels more simple to dive into that binary thinking. But it also leads to destruction and, you know, leads to this level of hopelessness that's unnecessary. You know, something I want to say is, I run across too many people that don't want to call themselves a coach or feel shame around coaching because they ingest this stuff, this negative stuff about the coaching industry and things of that nature. But if you step out into the real world and you tell somebody that you coach, they're either amazed or they're asking more about it. It's still innovative to them. And they're still like, wow, what is this coaching thing? And the thing is, it's like, you stop shitting on the thing that you do. Stop allowing people, even people who do swindle, even people who don't have their hearts in it, stop allowing them and how they operate devalue the gifts that you have. Because they don't have anything to do with you. And one last thing that grinds my gears is people who say, who just blindly say that the coaching industry needs more regulation. Like, this needs to be regulated. This happens way too much. Regulate what? What do you want to regulate? Because that leads down the road itself. You know, do you want to, what would regulation mean? Does that mean that you can't charge a certain price? That you can only charge a certain price range? That you're only allowed to talk about certain topics? That you're only allowed to, that you're not allowed to be friends with your clients on social media. So, you know, things of that nature, it's like, you can't just blindly scream regulation and think that's going to solve a problem. It kind of reminds me of the thing that I said in a previous episode. I'm very good at referring back to previous episodes. That's pretty cool. but a previous episode where this kid Sam fucking told the umpire that and asked if my my little league team, and he asked if my bat was regulated. Obviously, I haven't vented this out enough, but he asked if my bat was regulated, and then the umpire didn't know what to do, and he said that I couldn't use the bat for that game. It's the same fucking thing. Like, coaching is like your baseball bat with a big barrel that is helping you hit home runs. And you may be doing everything in alignment and everything in integrity, and then you have some motherfucker named Sam that comes along and says, is this right? Can we regulate this? Can we make sure we're doing the right thing? And then all of a sudden, your business that was helping people thrive, now you got to go through all this fucking red tape to just operate in the world. And you didn't even do anything wrong, but because of the fact that some other person can't take fucking personal responsibility for their decisions and ownership, they called the government to regulate it, and then they fuck up innocent people's lives. You know what I mean? So it's like, don't give me that shit where you just like scream out, regulation, regulation, let's get rid of some regulation. Because part of the reason why coaching is so innovative, and part of the reason why it's just this amazing modality, is because it's not held by training wheels and restraints. That's not to say I don't believe that people should be good at their craft and to work on their craft and to learn. But that's also saying is to learn to have discernment, learn to equip yourself to know where people swindle and things of that nature, and know where to protect yourself, know how to have financial boundaries, and know to have self-preservation. At the end of the day, entrepreneurship is a self-responsibility thing. You know, it's just, personal responsibility is a requirement for entrepreneurship. And if you're not willing to take that responsibility, then what the fuck are you doing trying to be a business owner? And what the fuck are you doing trying to be a coach? Like, just, you know, honestly, if you think that you need an outside source to save you, then do something else. You know, do something else. Be at a place where an outside source can save you, because being in a business where it requires you to take personal responsibility and self-preservation, you know, something's not in alignment there. Anyway, that's my rant. I'm against regulation. I'm pro personal responsibility. And, you know, if you've had bad experiences with coaches or anybody, for any service provider for that matter, my heart goes out to you. Just like in relationships, like, I've been done wrong in romantic relationships of the past, and I've been done wrong in coaching in the past. In fact, somebody still owes me $1,000 for this event that never happened, and she just disappeared. But my point is, I can't hold on to that $1,000 forever, you know? It's gone. She probably paid some other person for it. I don't know. It's gone. It's swindled. She probably, you know what? Knowing her, she probably paid the Tinder swindler that $1,000 I gave her, because, you know, like, she probably dated him and said, like, I got Brandon's $1,000. So it's the Tinder swindler's money right now. But the point is, it's like, you got to learn from these situations and not let these situations own you, and not let these situations hold you down. Because when you decide to learn from it, and you decide to, you know, you learn from it, you let go, but you know not to make the same mistake again, and you shift your focus on what you can create instead of what you can destroy, and you make it a lesson to make people's lives better from those lessons that you learned, it's so much more rewarding for you, and it's so much more rewarding for the gifts that you can share to others. So don't hold on to that resentment. You know, money comes, money goes. Heal yourself, learn from the lessons. You know, my heart goes out to you. I'm not trying to be insensitive here, but at the same time, to have that freedom and that sovereignty and to live your dreams, it's all about focusing on what you can build in this world. So thank you for listening. And once again, this podcast is sponsored by my program called Fuck Cancel Culture. Like I said, cancel culture is a shadow for visibility and expression. So I would love to have you in the program. The live iteration of this program at this moment is 111 Angel Numbers. So it's a very accessible price point. Would love to work with you for 10 days in this experience. My plans are to make this a digital course, and once it becomes a digital course, it'll probably be in the, my thoughts right now is probably the $297 price range. So if you want the live experience plus at a, I guess, considerably discounted rate from the future, then join Fuck Cancel Culture. Look in the show notes, the description, or follow me on social media and get in on that action for this amazing program that's going to help you say fuck cancel culture and embrace your true message and your true freedom of expressing yourself. Thank you for listening to this episode. It's been an honor, and until next time.